Welcome to the Shipping Podcast, a multi-fandom podcast for the shipper in you. Hosted by Shirazade, your friendly mod, OTP shipper and fan of all.
Even more than usual, I hope this episode finds you well. We recorded it a couple of weeks before Corona lockdown began in our respective countries and were in no way prepared. Not that anything could one really prepare for this situation the whole world finds itself in. I do hope listening how Masakin introduces me to Pagan Min and Ishvari Gale, our first video game ship from Far Cry 4, will provide you with distraction and entertainment. That's what fandom's for, isn't it? But what's a ship, you might ask? It's an abbreviation for relationship and can be used as a noun or verb. I ship Kirk/Spock, or my favorite ship is Spirk. Meaning, you would like to see Star Trek's Kirk and Spock as a couple, and are using one of the popular ship names, smushing their names together in a way that can be cutesy or cringy, depending on your point of view. This podcast will be zero judgment, 100% squee, as fans talk about their ships, why they ship them, and which fanworks might make you ship them too. At the end, each guest will nominate the next fan to talk about their OTP, that's one true pairing, i.e. they ship the love the most, creating a multi-ship, multi-fandom chain of interviews. Het, i.e. straight couples, slash, meaning same-sex pairings, fictional characters or real people. The only limit is the imagination. Sound like something you might enjoy? Please give it a listen and let me know what you think. The Shipping Cast is hosted on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandom, ish.net, where you can find show notes and subscribe on various podcasting platforms. There's also a Tumblr at ShippingCast, a Twitter at Shipping_cast, or you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net, where you could also send me a recorded voice message for inclusion in a future show. I'm very open to questions and opinions about the ships we talk about or shipping in general, so please get in touch. Because I've had to start paying for pro accounts for this podcast, I set up a Patreon on patreon.com/shippingcast, in addition to the Ko-fi and PayPal links that you can find on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. Would you like me to record some episodes that cover more general aspects of fandom instead of being limited to ships? One of the Patreon perks is special episodes, and you can even vote on the topics. A note in advance. As mentioned before, this podcast is a judgment-free zone. My guests are here to share what they love, not to defend themselves. We ship and let ship here, and any flames, i.e. hateful messages, will be used to roast marshmallows, to use old-school fandom lingo. This expression dates me, I know. I'm actually 39 now, and have been writing fanfiction since I hit puberty. However, I only joined online fandom in 2001, which was also when I started writing fic in English. My native language is Swiss German, in case you were wondering, and I have the equivalent of an MA in Culture Anthropology, Media Studies and German Literature. These days I work an admin job in the renewable energy sector, and I spend my free time consuming media in the form of books, movies, TV shows and podcasts. I find fandom fascinating, not just as a creative outlet in the form of writing, reading and gifting, but as a cultural phenomenon. I hope I'm not the only one who loves to hear people talk about their passions, and there are few things fans are more passionate about than their ships. The ship that we focus on in each episode is clearly stated in the title, so if you think that the ship will cause you distress or anger, please skip the episode. It's also quite likely that there'll be spoilers, so in the immortal words of River Song...
Spoilers?
I'm far from being a gamer, and to be honest, I wasn't really aware how rich the worlds are that you can explore in them, and how the storytelling can explore relationships, as well as enabling you to shoot stuff. Luckily, Masakin is quite the expert, and we don't just talk about Pagan and Ishvari's tragic relationship, but also about storytelling and video games in general. But let's dive right in. I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea. To a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea. Hi, Masakin. How are you?
I'm good, I'm good. Just sort of relaxing after work.
Yeah, relaxing is especially important these days, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I work in retail. It was very long. I work in like the kids section, so I have to fold a bunch of like baby clothes on a table, and like the tables are like kid sized, so I'm constantly like bending over.
No,
now my back is killing me.
Oh, so. yeah. So you've definitely earned yourself a relaxing evening and Sunday then.
Yeah.
Or what? Yeah. I mean, you're in Australia, right?
Yes.
Are shops open on Sundays? Do you have to work tomorrow?
Oh, I don't have to work this Sunday, but yeah, okay. No, shops are like absolutely open, but they shut at like most shut at 5. My store shuts at 5:30.
Okay.
Other stores, like it really depends on the store. Like some will like shut at like midday or something.
Because I do know that for a lot of people who come to like Europe think it's really weird that our shops are closed on Sundays. But for us, it's obviously like, the other way around. I feel so sorry for retail workers because here, literally everything is closed except for like cafes and shops at the train station.
I don't mind it as much because in Australia, we've got like penalty rates. So I get paid like a lot on Sundays. So normally on a given week, I'd get like $25 an hour, Australian dollars.
Okay.
And on a Sunday, I'll get like $46 an hour. So I actually love working on Sundays. Oh, yeah.
Okay. That would definitely sweeten the deal.
Yeah. But it's definitely like how long things are open is like definitely a cultural thing that's been changing. Like when I was a kid, like definitely like a lot less stuff was open. It was just the same thing, like cafes or supermarkets and stuff. Yeah. And yeah, as I've gotten older, places have like stayed open and longer.
Yeah.
Like I'm from Adelaide originally, and like even in Adelaide now, by 5:30 everything is shut. Whereas I live in Melbourne now, and if you're in the city, stuff doesn't shut until like 7 p.m. So
we are still pretty relaxed that way. I don't know, we have exactly the two Sundays before Christmas are open for all the last minute shopping. And everything else is closed, I think, you know. And also late in the evening they close at like 7. They tried sometimes to push it for to keep them open, to shops open longer, but it doesn't really work. I think people during the week, they just go shopping after work and then they go home. They don't really plan on after a day's work. They don't plan on hanging around hours.
We have late night shopping on Thursday and Friday night with stores stay open until 9. But like that's like retail stuff. So like all your sort of more specialized stores, like, I don't know, a furniture store doesn't really do that.
Okay, but so this is all real world work, real world stuff, boring. Why money? We are, of course, here to talk about much more fun things, namely fandom and shipping. And all the stuff that makes us happy.
Yes.
And why don't you introduce yourself like as your fanish persona?
Yes. So I have like sort of two main Tumblrs, and Tumblr is sort of my primary interaction with fandom. Like I don't really use Twitter. I don't understand Twitter. And also it seems like it's toxic. But anyway.
Yeah.
My main Tumblr is like Miss Revere, which is multi-fandom, all sorts of things. And then I have, like, even though I'm not talking about it today, I do have a Raylo Tumblr account as well, which is Official Raylo.
And I swear it was not my decision, just, you know, because I know people have requested we do an episode about Raylo, but I leave it up to my guests what they want to talk about. Just saying.
Yeah, well, Raylo, as much as I love it, like I literally have like an entire blog dedicated purely to Raylo. It's very popular, and so I wanted to talk about like another ship that was very important to me. That like it's not so much that the ship is tiny; it's just that the fandom is tiny, and I really feel like more people should get into it.
Yes, okay. But like before you got into like Raylo and into the Far Cry 4, mm-hmm. that's what we're talking about today.
Yep.
What was like your fandom history?
So I started off on DeviantArt of all places. That was sort of mm-hmm. my first introduction to fandom. I was obsessed for years with Mass Effect, which is another video game. And for years and years and years, I loved it. It was the first thing I ever wrote fan fiction about was for Mass mm-hmm. Effect. I still write fan fiction, just not about Mass Effect anymore. I was introduced to Tumblr by a friend when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
I got pretty deep into like Super Hulock. Which was like basically all Tumblr was for like the first few years. More so Supernatural than Sherlock or Doctor Who, though I didn't really like either of those actually that much. But I really loved Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And from there,
what was
it's
your
most
shift there?
Video Supernatural.
Yeah.
I quite liked Destiel.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise, everyone loved Destiel. I liked, oh God, now I'm forgetting the name. Sam and the Demon. It's also who Jared Padalecki's, like, wife in real life. I can't remember her name, though. But
okay, I've only seen the first season of Supernatural, so I'm not the right person to ask, I'm afraid.
Oh my God, I can't remember her name. But anyone who's like listening to this and if like they've watched Supernatural, they'll know.
Yeah, yeah. So do you usually have like multiple ships or one ship?
No, I'm very much multiple shipper. Because a lot mm-hmm. of the fandoms I'm actually participated in is video games. So Dragon Age, Mass Effect, Far Cry, The Witcher, Fallout 4.
Which of course that should make you happy now, like with the TV show.
With the TV show, I actually have kind of mixed feelings about the TV show. Like it's good, but I think the games did it better. I don't know how much of a controversial opinion that is, because like on Reddit, for example, Reddit hates the TV mm-hmm. show because it's Reddit and I don't know if that's them. But like Tumblr, like fandom loves it, and
mm-hmm.
I sort of sit in the middle. Like I don't hate it by any means, like I enjoyed watching it, but like I prefer the games over the show. Ultimately,
mm-hmm. I'm not a gamer. Just you know, in case
not a game. Okay. So
I mean, I know the names that you mentioned. I'm really proud of myself. I know like Mass Effect and Dragon Age and The Witcher. I'd heard of that before the TV show. But I haven't gamed. I think my only gaming experience was sitting next to my brother when he played Zelda. And I helped him, you know, solve all the riddles and stuff. But I didn't do the actual gaming. Because I'm not actually able to move my hands, like, differently.
Yeah.
So I have problems with all those stupid buttons.
Yeah, it takes a lot of practice, I think. Like, I have a lot of friends who aren't gamers, but I've, like, desperately tried to get into video games. And, like, they can't work out controllers or keyboards or it's just... The reason like I love video games so much and in particular why it helps being a multi-shipper is in a lot of the video games I play, because role-playing games are my favorite,
mm-hmm.
you can choose to romance characters, so to form a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you know, for Dragon Age Origins, for example, which is the first Dragon Age game, like, you can have a relationship with Alistair, who's my absolute favorite, like, true darling. There's Zevran, Morrigan, Liliana, like, all of them. Mm-hmm. I love all four, and you can be with all four.
Okay.
And, you know,
so that lends itself to multi-shipping, definitely.
Yeah, because, like, in Mass Effect, like, there's Shikarian, which is Garrus and Shepard, which is quite an interesting ship because Garrus is an alien. Specifically, he's, like, this dinosaur bird man. and he's one of the most popular ships of the entire... Okay. Like, he's in no way humanoid. Like, some of the other characters, like Liara, for example, like... She has a human face. It's just that she's got a human body, but she's got, like, purple skin. And she has, like, tentacles instead of hair. But, like, they're short tentacles.
Okay, so it's like the Star Trek or Star Wars type of alien. Like, yeah. You know, from the 60s and 70s, when that was the only thing you could do.
They're actually based off of a Star Trek alien. I don't know which one, because I've tried to get into Star Trek and failed, so, but yeah,
I'm trying to figure out purple skin and tentacles for hair.
I don't know if, like, they were, I shouldn't have said they were inspired by an alien, rather, like, because I got the Mass Effect art book, and basically they talk about, their design decisions, and they wanted to have that sort of, like, it's quite sexist, actually.
Okay. So it's along the lines of Orion slave girls, like green skin and really sexy and stuff.
Yeah. So, like, the Asari, which is the species name, they're all female race, which I think actually they really missed an opportunity to do some interesting stuff with gender. They failed. they failed completely, but anyway, so they're all female, and like half of them are like in really high positions of power because they're like ultra capitalists, and then the other half are like strippers, so you know,
you can tell it's made by definitely men. Orion slave girls then. Not one of Star Trek's finest hours.
No.
Sorry. Star Trek is like my OG fandom.
Your OG. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I did try one. Star Trek, but I feel like maybe I may have like started. I started with the original Star Trek.
Yes.
I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. Maybe I should have started with, like, more of the modern ones and then worked my way backwards or something. I don't know. But, like, I've been a huge Star Wars fan for ages, and that's by no means, like, young. So who knows? Maybe it's just not right.
I guess my first one was the original one, still my favorite. But I guess, you know, because I started watching that, you know, it was, like, afternoon TV when I was, I don't know, 10, 11, and then you really do not care about special effects. It's like, that was the early 90s. I honestly did not care about special effects. It was like, I was just like, ooh, I like these people, and Mr. Spock, and Kirk, and Bones, they're so funny.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely an element of it, because when I played... because I also like Star Wars video games, like Star Wars: The Old Republic 1 and 2, which came out in 2003 and 2005 respectively, and I played both of them when they came out and loved them, and like I can still play them now even though their graphics are like absolute garbage because they're, you know, well over 10 years old at this point. They're almost 20 years old. But I don't know if I could do that necessarily today, if I hadn't played them previously.
It's probably that, that. Yeah, similar to my burning love for the original Star Trek. And also, the other ones don't have Mr. Spock, so you know.
Of course. Yeah, that makes sense.
But video games is definitely a very interesting topic. One could probably make like a whole podcast just talking about like all the different aspects of like role play games, like the world building and the relationship building.
you absolutely could. Like David Gator, who's fairly well known narrative designer. That's what they call writers in video game industry. He used to have a Tumblr blog. He deleted it because he got bullied off of Tumblr because Tumblr's like that, unfortunately. I used to spend ages just reading his posts, like talking about like working in the industry and that sort of thing. I'm actually studying screenwriting at the moment, and I want to be in the video game industry. I want to write for them. So, yeah, I could, especially the writing portion. Like, I could talk endlessly about it. But, yeah,
but yeah. So, like we established, I don't game, and I actually have never heard of Far Cry. So, could you maybe give me a quick primer?
Quick overview. Okay. Far Cry is a series of games that basically from the third game onwards has tried to build itself around having really like visceral and like just impressive villains. They're bad guys, but like you love them because they're so cool. So it's a first-person shooter. You always play as if your eyes are the character. Yeah. You're like looking out as the character. And in the third game, I won't bother sort of talking so much about one and two because like three was where they sort of took a more interesting vision. Like they were pretty generic before that, which might be controversial to some hardcore Far Cry players.
What's the setting?
It's modern day.
Modern day.
So it the exact setting changes every game. So Far Cry 3, for example, you're in like a tropical jungle. Because you get like you're like this, you know, 26-year-old American guy, like rich guy, who goes like skydiving onto this island with your friends and your brothers, and then you get kidnapped by pirates, and then your brother's murdered by one of the pirates, and you have to like get back your friends before they're like trafficked off the island. It's actually it's very interesting. It's it's sort of the whole game is actually about like sanity versus insanity and like what it means to be insane, basically, because the main villain, a guy called Voss, who I also love dearly, and have also written fan fiction about him, but it's really bad. I'm not going to link it or anything because I was like 15, but anyway, he's like batshit insane, and you know, he has this whole speech, which is what really hyped people for the game on like the definition of insanity. And he claims like, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. And
yeah. And expecting a different result.
You know, he's saying it in the context of like, he's killed you like three times at this point in the game when he says his little speech. And, you know, you just keep getting better because each time he kills you, he like he doesn't actually kill you, obviously, like he fails because he always like leaves, like for example at one point he leaves you tied to a chair and like sets a house on fire that you're inside, and then he just leaves, but obviously you escape from the chair and escape from the fire and all that. So yeah, and then Far Cry 4, which is ultimately the one I want to talk about, is set in a fictional country called Kirat, which is it's in the Himalayas. And so it's very...
But definitely not very, Afghanistan.
No, definitely not Afghanistan. Like it's a fake country. It's sort of... Yeah, they didn't. It's not real. It's more like a city-state than, like, an entire country.
It's
literally... Well, I say city-state as if, like, there's a city in it. It's all, like, little villages and that sort of thing. And so you play as this kid called RJ Gale, and he has traveled to Kirat. He's a native Kirat citizen but grew up in the United States. And you travel there because your mother
died, and she wants her ashes spread with Lakshmana. And you don't know what Lakshmana is.
Okay.
You get told at one point that it's a temple, or it's probably a temple, but you can't get there because Pagan Min, the bad guy's in the way. So you meet Pagan at the very beginning of the game, and he kidnaps you. and he takes you to like his castle, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And like you literally have lunch with him, and he's like
saying, so is he like a warlord or
he's king technically. King. So there's a lot of backstory that's in the game, mm-hmm. but basically he helped these rebels overthrow the current king because they wanted democracy, but then he like stabbed them in the back and like declared himself king. So he's not actually from Kirat, he's from Hong Kong.
Okay.
Yeah. And so when you're having lunch with Pagan, he reveals that he knew your mother. Your mother being Ishwari Gale, who is dead at the beginning of the game. So this ship, one of the characters is dead before the game starts, and you don't ever like, it's very strange in that regard.
And the other one is evil?
Yeah, well, I would argue he's not evil at all. Because that's the sort of thing is, like, you think he's this bad guy. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's not good. I wouldn't go as far to say he's good. Like, he definitely does bad things. But, like, compared to... Because in the game, basically, you have to work with the... Golden Path, which are the rebels who wanted to overthrow the original king, and now they want to overthrow Pagan. And so they have two leaders, which is a guy called Sabal and a woman called Amita. So they at first seem like, you know, Sabal really cares about people, Amita really cares about the cause, and you kind of have to choose between them. And over the course of the game, and there are going to be spoilers here, so...
Yes. Sorry, this podcast is fully spoiled.
You should still play the game even though I spoil it.
Yes.
Anyway, you discover that Sabal, he basically wants a return to tradition. So he wants to go back to what they were, like, but with a democracy, and what they were was stuff like child marriage and that sort of thing, which is... pretty gross. And then Amita sort of positions herself as the more progressive one, you know, because she doesn't want any of that stuff. But what she actually wants to do is turn Kirat into a drug state and just like employ child labor. So to do that. So they both suck. I dislike both of them. And Pagan wouldn't, well... It's kind of complicated because, like, a lot of it, because especially because the ship, like, occurs before the events of the game, like, you could argue that a lot of it is up to sort of fanon interpretation.
Yeah.
I mean, there are definitely sort of evidence that, you know, like, for example, Ishwari convinces Pagan that she, that he should send some, like, students to Singapore to study to become doctors and stuff so they can, you know, come back and, you know, they can sort of build their health system and that sort of thing. And he does that, but the students immediately claim asylum when they come to Singapore and stuff. But it is supposed to be like a war-torn sort of country. And I guess the reason I ship it, I started shipping it, by the way, like halfway through the game, because you don't really get Ishwari's perspective as such, but you get Pagan's and you get Mohan. Now, Mohan Gale is Ishwari's husband, who she married at 13, and he was, I can't remember his exact age, but he was in his 20s.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah, that sort of thing. from all accounts, their marriage was okay, I guess, as far as child marriage goes. Yeah. And RJ, which
and I mean,
is the
he was only in his 20s, you know, could have been worse.
Yeah, no, but like, he wasn't like, to our knowledge, because
yeah,
it doesn't tell you.
Okay, yeah, so there's no like bad. Flashbacks.
No, there's no flashbacks or anything, unfortunately. I would have killed for some flashbacks anyway.
Yeah.
And so when Ishwari's about, oh, I hope I'm getting my timelines right here. I think she's about 18, I think, 18 or 19. That's when Mohan, he like forms the Golden Path and they overthrow the king. And they do that with Pagan's help, because Pagan, coming from Hong Kong, and also he has like his family was like a gang family in Hong Kong. His family, you know, he's got lots of money. He's got like the weapons that they need and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finally, you know, with his help, overthrow the king. And then, yeah, he betrays them and declares himself king. So all this time, Ishwari's like begging to help, begging to be a part of it. She wants to be a part of the Golden Path, but Mohan is more like, no, like, you're not, you know, women belong in the kitchen, effectively. They don't, they're not soldiers, that sort of thing. But after Pagan betrays them, he like eventually relents and he says, okay, you can go be a spy at his palace. And Ishwari, and he, you know, tells her to take RJ with him, with her, to be like more convincing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You get this perspective, by the way, because you can find pages of Mohan's journal throughout the game.
Okay.
So you can get his perspective. And then Pagan also tells you his perspective by you have like a radio, which he literally just calls you on to talk. Because like, yeah, anyway, so throughout the course of the game, it's revealed that like Ishwari and Pagan actually began a relationship, and it wasn't like a honeypot. Like they actually genuinely fell in love. A key point to note here is that at this point, Ishwari is about 19 years old. Pagan is 21.
Okay,
so the age gap
is so that is completely age appropriate.
Exactly. And so, and it basically it's implied that he just, you know, treats her a lot better. He treats her as an equal. Mm-hmm. Like he listens to her, and like that's the thing. Like she convinces him to send those medical students, even though it ultimately didn't go how they hoped.
Yeah.
And she's shown to be just like a good influence on him. Mm-hmm. And eventually, throughout the game, you discover that. And by the way, because it RJ's like, I think by the end of it, not the game, like the Ishwari and Pagan stuff, mm-hmm. he's about 3 mm-hmm. years old, so he doesn't remember Pagan at all, but
yeah.
For the first sort of for his second and third year of life, like Pagan was effectively his dad.
Okay.
He just doesn't remember him. Which is why Pagan is so like fond of RJ throughout mm-hmm. the game. Like he's always nice to him, he never wants to kill him, like that sort of thing. Anyway, and it's revealed that Pagan and Ishwari actually had a baby together. And that baby is called Lakshmana. And so you have a half-sister.
I'm very impressed how you remember all these names, by the way.
I have ADHD, and I hyper-focused on this a lot. Like, I was 17, I was in year 12, which is last year of school, and
mm-hmm.
I had so many assignments, and I was just sitting there like writing fan fiction about these two. Like I loved them so much. I still do, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, so you have a daughter, a sister called Lakshmana.
Mm-hmm.
But and this is where it gets really sad. Lakshmana is dead. Mohan found out about Lakshmana and mm-hmm. Murdered her.
Ooh.
And she's a baby, by the way. Yes.
Oh.
It's never revealed like how he killed her, just that he did. And Ishwari goes back to their house that she has with Mohan, and she kills Mohan. Which, you know, I think is a pretty reasonable response, to be honest. From there, she basically says, you know, she leaves Pagan. She leaves him a letter, but I think she also says it to him as well. Remember, it's a bit sketchy there. You know, that she loves him, Pagan, but, like, Kirat, like, living here only causes, like, pain and suffering. So she flees to the US, like, claiming asylum with RJ. And they never see each other again. And it's, like, heartbreaking. And so she wants to be, have her ashes spread with Lakshmanas.
Yeah.
So Pagan actually has a shrine dedicated to Lakshmana, and at the very end of the game you go and spread the ashes with Pagan. And it's very sad. I cried a lot. He tells you, like, you know, how much he loved, like, Ishwari and Lakshmana and all that, but, you know, he says that he just used Lakshmana's death to do, like, the horrible things that he already wanted to do. Supposedly he rules Kirat with, like, somewhat of an iron fist. You don't really get a great sense of that in the game, in my opinion, but I don't know if that's just, like, a failure of, like, the developers, or if he doesn't actually do it. It's sort of revealed throughout the game that, like, he's not really interested in ruling anymore. Like, he has a body double that, like, does appearances for him and stuff, because he'd just rather stay up in his palace. He also, there's a secret ending you can get where basically at the very beginning of the game, because you have to choose, throughout the game, you have to continuously choose between Amida and Sabal and ultimately, like, pick one to rule the Golden Path. But at the very beginning of the game, when there's, like, this commotion and Pagan says, like, stay right there, I'll be right back in, like, 10 minutes, that's when you escape. But if you actually wait the 10 minutes in real time, he comes back and, like, takes you to spread Lakshmana's ashes, and you can finish the game right then and there. Yeah, and he tells you everything. And it's very, and he literally, like, says, he gifts you Kirat. He, like, says, yeah, you can be king now. And then he, like, leaves. Mm-hmm. You can kill him if you want to. I never do, because I don't think you should.
Not once. You haven't killed him.
I can't do it. I can't make mean decisions in any game. Like, in a lot of games, especially role-playing games, you have the option to be, like, an arsehole or just be evil. And I can't do it. I feel terrible if I do it. I always have to be a nice person.
Well, you've grown attached, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so. But, yeah, it's just, it's an interesting ship because, like, there's so much to analyze, in my opinion, and, like, I did have, like, one specific friend I'd do this with, and, like, there was a point on Tumblr where, like, I was, like, the blog you'd come to ask questions about, like, Pagan Min and, like, analyzing, like, that sort of thing.
Just, like, a really stupid question from someone who's never played a first-person shooter in her life. And it wasn't my brother's favorite genre either, so I really don't have much experience. How do you get all that story when you walk around shooting people?
Well,
isn't that what first-person shooter means?
Well, like, you do a lot of that, but there are, like, other things that, like, happen. So, like, you talk to characters. So you talk to, like, Amita and Sabal. And Pagan, like, while you're, like, running around the country, literally calls you and talks to you.
Okay.
And then, like, at one point you actually get captured by him, and you get taken to a prison that they've got in like the mountains, mm-hmm. Which is run by Yuma, who is Yuma. I didn't mention her in the thing because she's not really relevant to the ship, but Yuma is Pagan's sort of like adopted sister. So mm-hmm. when they were kids, her family, which was like family friends with Pagan's family, they were killed because gangs. And so her family, so Pagan's family like adopted her. So she's like Pagan's general and she runs the army and that sort of thing. So yeah, you get taken to like the prison and you're obviously unconscious and then you wake up and then they both talk to you. And that sort of thing. But then you have to escape and kill everyone.
Which is where the shooting comes in.
Yeah. And like you meet other characters that like give you missions that like also contribute to the story. So like there's this guy who I think I'm going to probably butcher his name. I think it's Loginus, I think is how you pronounce it. Who's like, he's a reference to Far Cry 1 or 2. I think it's Far Cry 2 he's a reference to because he's like implied to be this ex-African warlord. And in the second game, that's when you, it's set in Africa. I can't remember where specifically because I haven't actually played it, but he's implied to just basically be one of the warlords, but it's not confirmed, just implied. But he talks to you about like Pagan and that sort of thing and gets you to do missions for him. Then there's like this other guy, Ravi Ray Rana, who's hilarious. He runs the radio station. And he gets you to take down, like, Pagan's propaganda centers. But you can, like, go in a car, turn the car on, and the radio will play, and, like, it'll be Ravi Ray Rana talking. So it's a very different kind of storytelling to, like, a TV show or a film. Because it's not necessarily in your face following the plot, if that makes sense. It's a lot of like, like I said, like you can find Mohan's journals and you don't actually have to find them. Like it's entirely up to you if you want to find out more of the story and the context behind everything. But like you usually have to do like puzzles or platforming. So platforming being like running and jumping basically to access those. But I think especially for a lot of people who don't play games at all, they've come a long way since like the 90s. the sort of the stories that you can craft are much bigger in a lot of ways than anything you can do with film or television. Especially because when it comes to role-playing games in particular, it's a lot of it is optional. Yeah, so like Dragon Age Inquisition, for example, if you do every single quest, it would take you about 100 hours to do it. I've done it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of effort. But it's fun. I enjoy it. That's why I do it. And yeah, it's just interesting.
And you already mentioned that you were like the Tumblr blog that people would come to. So there's like although there was like a proper fandom around this?
There is still a fandom. It's pretty small, especially on Tumblr, because I think there's a few reasons. One, it's not a role-playing game, and role-playing games are where you tend to get the most sort of dedicated fans. Because you know when you can create your own character, it's very easy to invest in that character. Whereas Far Cry, you don't. But also, the kind of people it attracts is different. Like something because I use Tumblr and I do use Reddit. I don't really use it for fandom stuff, but like I've looked into it, and with a lot of the fandom stuff on Reddit, it's mostly men. And their enjoyment is usually different to what I find a lot of women or queer people enjoy. Like, for example, with The Witcher, like there'll be like 10,000 screenshots of like, oh, this game is so beautiful, which like, I mean, yes, it is, but like, I don't really care. like the discussions on character and fan fiction, and I mean they'll still share plenty of fan art, but like usually it's like softcore porn and that sort of thing, whereas on Tumblr I find it's a bit more nuanced. That's not to say that like Reddit or like male fans don't do that stuff, it's just like not the same, or they're on Tumblr themselves.
I mean, transformative fandom has always been much more women and queer people.
It has. And I think Far Cry, it just tends to sort of lean itself more towards like a male audience rather than a female audience, hence why there's less. That's why it's so tiny. So like, which in some ways is a really good thing. I find that the tiny fandoms are a lot more fun to be in. Because everyone knows each other, everyone's really nice to each other.
And I guess you're just grateful for everyone who's willing to like engage.
Well, like, it was kind of nice, like, even because we'd all follow each other, and even if I hadn't necessarily, like, spoken to them, like, if there were ever, like, those ask memes or whatever where you'd, like, have to, like, tag five friends or something, like, they'd do that, which I really enjoyed. There was a lot of role players, which is something I've, like, dabbled in on Goodreads of all places, but never, yeah. It wasn't even for fandom related stuff. It was like for like supernatural schools and stuff. So like you'd be like a vampire or a werewolf or a fairy or something and create your own character. They were lots of fun. But they were on Goodreads.
I
experienced fandom in some very weird places. It's kind of because each Far Cry game has since like each game is different, it's got a different setting, it's got different characters and that sort of thing. Like Far Cry 4, the fandom I don't think is going to get a whole lot bigger. It's probably going to just diminish in size slowly over time. Like Far Cry 5 has a more active fandom and a larger one. I think because I just, in the time that it came out, I think was just a more, I don't know if like, how to explain it, but like more accessible, I guess, like more and more people are getting into games or something. I don't know. It just has a bigger fandom, even though I think that game's actually terrible. That's because Ubisoft are cowards and they would not lean into the white supremacy stuff because like a little bit off topic, slight tangent, but like in Far Cry 5, like the bad guy is supposed to be this like preacher guy in the US. So it's actually set in a place called Hope County in the US, which I assume is fake. They use all this like white supremacy symbolism, but then like when people go, is he a white supremacist? Ubisoft is like, no, of course not. He's just a preacher. And I don't know, it just feels pretty
if
gross,
it quacks like opinion. A dog,
it is exactly. But I have my other issues with the game. Like they got rid of it being, they tried to make it like a role playing game, but it's a silent protagonist. And part of what made the previous villains good was that they had a personal connection with the player character. So like in Far Cry 3, Vos, murders your brother in front of you. And then in Far Cry 4, like he's like your stepdad that you didn't know
obviously,
you had. And Far Cry 5, you'd literally just someone from I think the FBI or the local police. I can't remember. And you don't talk. So
is the fandom like mostly like general Far Cry 4, or is it like different ships as well?
So for Far Cry 4, there's a lot of shipping between RJ and Pagan Min.
Okay.
I don't really like it. It's not that I've, like, because I like Raylo, I'm very conscious of, like, antis and all that shit, but, like, it's just, it's squicky for me. I feel like he's your dad and just not into that. But, yeah, that's very popular. RJ and Sabal is very popular. Amita and Sabal is very popular. People love a good hate ship, I guess. but all the ships are pretty... Oh, Pagan Min and Voss, even though, like, they're in separate games and never meet, and Voss is dead by the time Pagan Min's game rolls around. That's also a thing, which I find quite entertaining. but, yeah, it's probably, at this point especially, mostly role players. But, you know, you still get some fan art here and there and that sort of thing. And fan fiction, there's still a sort of active fan fiction community. I was actually looking at it earlier to see what they've got. And it's still being updated, which is nice. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, obviously, I guess with the Pagan Ishvari shipped, it would be mostly pre-canon, you know, set in the past when they were together.
Yeah, so a lot of it's pre-canon. There's not a whole lot of... Because, yeah, most of the... Like, a lot of the fan fiction, especially stuff that has multiple chapters, is stuff that's, like, how Pagan and Ishvari got together and that sort of thing. Like, my favourite one is one of those, even though it's unfinished and I don't think it'll ever be updated, but it was so good. Yeah, people don't really tend to do AUs and that sort of thing, unless, like, in-universe AUs, though. Like, you know, what if, like, Ishvari wasn't dead and she came with RJ to Geralt and that sort of thing? There's a few of those. yeah, which it suits me pretty well because I feel like this is, like, such a... I feel like very much the odd one out is that, like, I really don't like AUs for the most part, especially AUs that are out of universe. So, like, coffee shop AUs, I don't know, they just, they don't do it for me. I think that, like, part of what I enjoy about, like, a ship is also, like, the world that they live in.
Yeah.
So, like, I like reading about, like, when it's Raylo, for example, I like reading about Raylo in the Star Wars universe. I don't get a whole lot of enjoyment about them going to uni or that sort of thing.
Yeah. So you already mentioned that you're a writer?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes, yes. So have you written for Pagan and Ishvari?
Yes. Oh, most of it I didn't end up publishing because I didn't finish it.
So you're one of those nice people who only post fic that is finished?
No, I'm one of those people who posts like three chapters and then never updates again, and I'm so sorry.
okay, yeah, hashtag relatable. So
yeah, so yeah, I have written for Pagan and Ishvari. I didn't give it to you because it's I was 17. And trying to write smut for the first time, but, like, being really awkward about it and also, like, having no experience. So I would say it's not very good. However, it's a small fandom. It's very easy to find. And to be quite frank, when it's a small fandom, you just got to take what you can get.
Yeah. So you already mentioned that small fandom. So you weren't able to put together, like, a huge number of recs. But before you mention these, is there anything else that you want to share about this ship?
I made, like, I did used to do, like those aesthetic posts on Tumblr, but, like, for each character. So I did, like, I did one for Pagan, I did one for Yuma, and I did another one for... Noor, who's like a character I didn't mention, but she's in, she's one of like the people you have to like defeat, even though she, she commits suicide in the game, so you don't really have to defeat her, but I made one for her as well. I used to really enjoy that sort of stuff. Well, not used to. I still enjoy it. It's just that I no longer have Photoshop because I don't go to school anymore and they won't pay and no one will buy it for me because it's too expensive. Yeah. But, yeah. I think it's... I would encourage people to, like, at least, you know, try the game and play out, even if you're not, like, a gamer. Like, just play the easiest difficulty. It's what I do because I don't care about, like, the challenge. I care about the story personally.
Yeah.
And Far Cry doesn't, but a lot of games now are starting to have, like, a narrative option, which is, like, the easiest gameplay possible so that you can just enjoy the story, which is really good. And it's... it's just something I recommend because like it's a different way of storytelling compared to like film or television. And I think like there's a lot of stories that video games tell that you don't necessarily get or like they don't work very well in the format of like a film or a TV show. Pretty much every video game that's ever been made into a movie is terrible because of that. Assassin's Creed, Warhammer, potentially controversial, but like Tomb Raider.
It was a video game.
Yeah, Warhammer or Assassin's
Warhammer,
Creed.
Warhammer, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that's Warhammer. Oh,
that
not
was
Warhammer,
the one with
sorry.
those like ogre people.
Yeah, I didn't mean Warhammer. I mean Warhammer does have video games, but I actually meant World of Warcraft.
Okay.
But that is the one you're thinking of, is World of Warcraft.
That is the one. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just, for some reason, switched those two in my mind.
Me too, obviously.
Yeah, and, yeah, I think people need to stop... people who don't play video games, like, I think they should stop sort of worrying about being bad. Like, it's just about having fun. And ultimately, if... playing the game isn't that fun for you, but you like the story, you can just watch a Let's Play on YouTube and, like, fast forward through the gameplay parts. That's what I would do. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you did find a couple of things that you want to wreck, right?
I sent you, I think, two things.
Yes.
My favorite fanfic, which is that one I mentioned before, which is, like, how Pagan and Ishwari got together, but then, like, it's not finished.
Yeah. Yes.
But that person who wrote that is now a Raylo fan. So, you know, just saying, if you like Raylo, you'll probably like Pagan and Ishwari because it's friends to enemies to lovers.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting way to go, but yeah. And then the favorite fan art I sent you, it's actually the post that it made. It has like three different fan arts. It's the one at the bottom, which is
okay,
mostly just of Ishwari, but it's like them dancing, and I don't know, it's just it's just nice.
Yeah.
I just like it, yeah. Oh, that's one other thing I forgot. So throughout the game, you actually don't know what Ishwari looks like or Lakshmana. Oh, no, you do know what Lakshmana looks like. At the very end, you see a painting of her, but you don't know what Ishwari looks like. You could actually buy, like, Pagan has a pen that he uses at the beginning of the game to kill someone because they got blood on, no, because they screwed up and also they got blood on his shoes. But he's Pagan's very much a fashionista. he like literally walks around in like a pink suit. and you could buy that pen as like merchandise, and it has like a little like compartment in it that if you open up has got like a photograph of Ishwari and Lakshmana together.
Oh, okay.
Which is it's just really cute.
So I take it you own that pen.
I do not, because
do not.
I actually didn't discover Far Cry 4 until quite Well, it wasn't like a lot after, but I think it was still available, actually. I was going to say it wasn't available anymore, but I think it was. It's just that I live in Australia and shipping is really expensive, especially from like the US. So and I was in high school, so I don't think I could like afford it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely collected most of my Fanish stuff like in the past, like after I finished high school and started working.
Definitely.
Awesome. I was just thinking, since you don't have like a whole lot of recs for this particular ship, and we've been talking a little bit about video games, maybe you could rec some video games for people to try in addition to Far Cry 4.
Oh, I could definitely do that. I'd recommend Far Cry 3 as well. It doesn't matter which order you play them in, because they're like separate games. But Dragon Age is a series I would absolutely recommend. Dragon Age Origins is the first one, then obviously Dragon Age 2, and then Dragon Age Inquisition. Dragon Age Origins in particular, because you can play it as a standalone, technically, and also because that game is over 10 years old now. So if you don't have, like, if you've only got a laptop or something, it'll still run. And in terms of like combat and stuff, like if you've not new to video games, it's very easy combat. You can like pause in the middle of combat and like issue commands to your companions and that sort of thing. And on top of that, the story is really, really like fun and good. And it's just a good time. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, especially for Star Wars fans. If you like
Star Wars?
Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. If you like Raylo, you'll love the first game, because Raylo is pretty clearly inspired by Revan and Bastila, who are technically an enemies to Lover's ship. Again, it's the game's like a 15 years old and 17 years old respectively, so they'll run on anything. The graphics are really ugly, but if you can get past that, it's a very easy game to play. Star Wars Republic 2 as well, again, if you're a Star Wars fan, or even like if you're a big like literature, I guess, fan, and you like story archetypes and that sort of thing, so like Star Wars Knights of the Republic 1 is like your classic hero's journey sort of Star Wars story with a twist. But then the second game is kind of like a complete deconstruction of like that, and also like the Star Wars sort of story and everything that's established. It's really good. What else? I will always recommend The Witcher 3. The Witcher 1 and 2 can be really, like, Witcher 1 is basically unplayable. It's kind of broken at this point. Like, it crashes a lot. And then The Witcher 2 can have similar issues. But you can play The Witcher 3 without playing the other two. You will miss out on some context, but, like, I've played The Witcher 3 without playing the first two, and I got it all right. That game is a bit harder in terms of gameplay if you're not used to games, but there is like adjust the story option, but that one is just, in terms of storytelling and everything, it's pretty rare for me to not have a single criticism of a game, and I don't have really any of that. It's really good. What else? This one's a bit harder, but there's God of War. But the new one, God of War 4, I think it is, or is it 5? I don't know. Because I've only played that one. I haven't played the previous Gods of War. Although I have watched my brother play them. And video games do this really interesting thing that other, like, film and television don't really do. Like, film kind of attempts it, but it's usually not very good. My brother and I, because my brother is big fan of video games, big influence for me when it comes to video games. We call it like a saving a franchise, or not franchise, but like a game. So like, because when certain games came out, the technology wasn't really there to like tell the story that they wanted to tell. And so, you know, like 5-10 years later, they'll like make, like, sometimes it's like a sequel, sometimes it's like a spiritual successor to the game, and it'll just be like what they originally wanted to make. So like the original God of Wars, for example, were quite juvenile in their story. Like, for example, one of the, they have like a sex mini game where you can go and have like threesomes and shit with like prostitutes, which is, yeah, that's a thing. The Witcher 1 had this problem as well, actually, except it wasn't a mini game. Every time you had sex with someone, you'd get like a pin-up card of that character. But anyway,
complaining about the sex that Geralt is having on the TV show. He's very easy on the eyes.
Oh yeah, but it's more the in the way that they handle it rather than like the sex itself. Because plenty of games, especially these days, have sex in them, but it's the way they handle it that's the issue, I guess. Anyway, God of War, the new one, it's a very serious, very sort of grown-up version of the games, and the story it tells is really quite beautiful. It's a really common archetype I've noticed at the moment of like having the sort of somewhat unwilling father slash father figure having to like parent a child or teenager. Geralt with Ciri, in God of War it's his actual son, Atreus, in the film Logan, and then the next game that I would also recommend is The Last of Us, which also has this archetype. And it's a zombie game. It's actually one of the more unique takes on zombies. They're actually making a TV show for it as well, a HBO show. So probably a good time to get into it. They're also making a sequel to the first game, like 10 years, I think. No. 9 or 10 years after the original game came out. Which is, it's a big time jump for, between sequels for games. And it's basically about this guy, Joel, who has to get this 14-year-old girl called Ellie basically halfway across the United States because she's immune to the cordyceps virus that virus is the wrong word because it's actually a fungus that turns people into zombies, and they're going to try and make a cure from her immunity. And at the start, because he's just a mercenary, he like doesn't really care about this girl, like he doesn't really like her, and then like throughout the game, like he basically just becomes her dad, and it's great. It is quite a, that one is quite difficult, even in the easier difficulties. And also God of War and The Last of Us are only available on PlayStation, by the way. But you can watch Let's Plays on YouTube and that sort of thing if you're interested in the story, and I recommend it.
So great. Thank you so much.
Not a problem.
That's, I mean, I'm still unable to handle anything with a
with a controller. If you try it on a computer, you've got mouse and keyboard. And some games, especially shooters, are actually much, much better to play on a mouse and keyboard than they are on a controller. Yeah, they're much easier. Yeah, that might work. Oh, sorry, before I go, one more game. Fallout is really good. The sort of fandom favorite is Fallout New Vegas. Which is done by Obsidian, which is not the normal studio. In terms of story and everything, it's great. In terms of game stableness, It's not, it crashes a lot. That's not their fault, but just something to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Then there's Fallout 3, which is done by Bethesda, and Fallout 4, which is done by Bethesda as well. Fallout 4, I actually almost talked about one of my ships from that, which is Paladin Dance and The Soul Survivor. I love them as well. You can romance characters in that, although I feel like the writing is not as good.
Okay.
But they're fun games, and if you play it on computer, you can mod the shit out of them. Mod is like where you like actually change the game files. You can add anything into it pretty much from Nexus, which is a website that you get mods from. It's great. I highly recommend. But you can play those on consoles as well.
Cool. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Not a problem.
I thought it was really interesting. I mean, I didn't know that there was like this like depth and you know, of story in like a video game.
Yeah, like a lot of people, especially people who don't play a lot, aren't really aware. But I think especially if you're already involved in fandom, they would probably really enjoy it.
Cool.
So yeah, I recommend.
Great. So did you find me someone to talk to next?
Jedi Master Rey.
Any idea what they might be talking about?
Talking about?
Yeah, which ship?
She is a Raylo shipper, so she might talk about Raylo, but
which, like I said, that would make her, if she does, she would be the fourth Raylo fan on the podcast in a row, and the first one to actually, like,
talk
use
about
that
Raylo.
Ship.
We'll see. Have had quite extensive talks about other ships, and, well, because we share quite a few ships in common, and, I would be very curious to see if she does Raylo, because I'm not sure if she will.
Yeah, now I'm curious as well. And where can people find you?
So I am Miss Rivia on Tumblr. If you want my Raylo stuff, even though I didn't talk about Raylo, I am official-raylo.tumblr.com. And yeah, I'm happy for people to chat to me on either.
Yeah,
I feel like I should probably give my Steam username because I just spent a long time talking about video games.
Yes.
A second while it loads up.
Do you have an AO3?
I do. It's actually a reference, like the username to Far Cry 3. It's just straight up one of the characters' names, which is Citra underscore. I actually don't know how to pronounce it, but I think it's pronounced Taluji May. I don't know. If people want to find
it's
me on
Steam. It's a problem,
Steam,
I guess, if you never hear them say the name out loud.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because they always call her just Citra in the game, but she does have a surname that they don't use. If people want to find me on Steam, I play a lot of Rainbow Six Siege, which doesn't have a story, but it is a very fun multiplayer game. It's Clawflach. Yeah, it's a reference to Futurama. It's like Zoidberg, like the lobster guy. It's like their mating ritual. but yeah, if anyone ever wants to play games with me,
okay.
For it.
Great, cool. We've never had a Steam username before, and people can find all of that in the show notes as always. As well as the Rex and for like all the game names and everything. Yeah. And again, thank you for joining me today.
Not a problem. It was lots of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And now I'll let you go into your well-deserved weekend.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea. To a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
This wraps up the 31st episode of the Shipping Podcast. With most of us stuck inside, maybe this will inspire you to pick up that video game controller and check out Far Cry 4 and some of the other games Mazikeen talked about. As always, you'll find links to everything we mentioned in the show notes on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandom, ish.net. As for the next episode, next week I'll publicly release the second Patreon special, a live cast from last July's The Italian Institute Convention 3 about real-person shipping with some of my girls from Jalex Squad. The next regular episode will be released as always in 2 weeks' time, on April 24th, earlier for Patreon supporters. And yes, Jedi Master Rey did choose Star Wars and Reylo to talk about, which I know for a fact is something several of you are looking forward to. If, however, you don't like Rey and Kylo, or Jalek and the actors that portray them for that matter when it comes to the special episode, feel free to skip the episode and maybe check out the back catalogue instead. Not every ship is everyone's cup of tea, but I personally always find enjoyment in hearing about people's passions, even if I don't share them. This podcast is, after all, first and foremost a positive place where people can squee without fear of judgment, especially in the current situation. You can follow and get in touch on Tumblr as ShippingCast, on Twitter as Shipping_cast, and you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of the podcast and the ships we've been covering. You can find the podcast on all major and some minor podcasting platforms. A full list can be found on shippingcast.fandomish.net/subscribe. As mentioned before, if you want to get the next episode the moment I finish it, at least one day early, you can become a patron on patreon.com/shippingcast. This also has some other nice rewards, like extra episodes on other fandom topics, and that way you can help me pay for the necessary pro accounts for the podcast. Also, I'm hoping to one day be able to afford transcripts to make the podcast more accessible. There's also the option to send me a one-time donation on ko-fi.com/shirazade or via PayPal to webmistress@shirazade.net. All these options are also described on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. And you can help me totally for free by leaving reviews or simply spreading the word to other fans. I'm Shirazade, spelled Shirasade, and you can find me as such on Tumblr, AO3, YouTube, Pillowfort, Dreamwidth, and on shirazade.net, although I'm not active on all of them. I've also joined Mastodon as shirazade@fandom.inc with a K. The podcast artwork was created by the wonderful Little Zion. The music is Sailor Song by the Peerless Quartet. Thanks so much for listening, and remember, you are the captain of your ship.